Managing Violence Podcast, episode 67, with former FBI behavioral analyst Robin Drake.
If you observe a behavior, a negative behavior, once or twice, and you start making excuses or living with a thing called hope they'll be better next time, you're really setting yourself up for some really bad effect. Because the likelihood of them changing their behavior without an outside stimulus causing them to do it is slim to none.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Managing Violence Podcast. If you've ever asked yourself, how do I know who to trust? Who can I trust to bring into my life, to invest in, to be able to trust with my children or my safety or my loved ones, or even just to trust with my money or with my reputation or with my business? Then today's guest, Robin Drake, may be the man that you need to listen to. Robin has written three books about trust. He's a former behavioral analyst. He was the head of the FBI counterintelligence behavioral analyst team. So his job was actually recruiting spies and building relationships with spies and intelligence assets for the US government. He has a fascinating system for establishing and testing trust. And he goes into that in great detail. This may not seem like it has a lot to do with violence, but when we talk about violence in relationships and how predators work, a lot of that has to do with manipulation of trust. So understanding how we can test and verify the trust signals that we're receiving from other human beings is instrumental in being able to detect deceptive behavior. Robin has an amazing amount of experience in that, and you'll get a lot of value from this. And just before I jump into the interview with Robin, I just want to remind you, if you're listening to this and it's still the end of October 2020, so a couple more days after this comes out, I would like to remind you that all our Patreon contributions for the month of October to Managing Violence, which is patreon.com/managingviolence, all the Patreon contributions for the month of October are being donated to the Ensign Inouye Foundation, to help fund Ensign's humanitarian work with orphans and displaced people in the north of Japan. So if you'd like to contribute to our gift to the Ensign Inouye Foundation, make sure you head on over to patreon.com/managingviolence. Or if you're listening to this after that point, then please feel free to contribute individually at ensigninouyefoundation.org. Anyway, that's the only announcement for today. So without further ado, here is former FBI behavioral analyst, author, and the leader of People Formula, Mr. Robin Drake. All right, my guest today is Robin Drake. Robin is a best-selling author, a professional speaker, trainer, facilitator, and a retired FBI special agent and the chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin has taken his life's work of recruiting spies and broken down the art of leadership, communication, and relationship building, into five steps to trust and six signs of who you can trust. He's the author of three books. The first book, It's Not All About Me, which is about building quick rapport with anyone. The Code of Trust, which is about building a culture of trust. And so the most recent book, which we're going to be talking about today, Sizing People Up, which is all about predicting behavior from seemingly subtle tells. Robin, your career reads like the script of a movie. You start off as a Marine, and then you end up training and catching spies for the US government. Then you end up as a behavioral analysis expert running your own company and analyzing behavior and providing behavioral analysis services for corporations. Man, what a life. Thank you very much for joining us for the Managing Violence Podcast.
Thanks, and thanks for having me. And I'm sorry I'm giving a chuckle because, you know, when you read that stuff off, all I think to myself is, wow, I really failed at everything I really wanted to do. all the stuff I wound up doing was my B plan because I failed out of my major at the Naval Academy. I wanted to be a Navy pilot, test pilot, and an astronaut. Can you see I went pretty sideways?
you just succeeded in a different direction. That's all.
Succeeded in a different direction. Absolutely. You know, when you don't fight change and you go along with it, you know, life's opportunities just keep presenting themselves to you.
Yeah, I mean, and as I mentioned, man, that's a pretty incredible career to achieve what you have achieved, and certainly to be able to contribute
I think your books are what is going to stand the test of time, because your material is so inherently practical. And we're chatting offline. I mean, you're not someone who consults on violence specifically, but your material about trust and building relationships and building rapport and identifying who can be trusted, who can't be trusted, has significant implications for how we manage violence in our lives and relationships in our lives. And that's the reason that I thought it'd be great to reach out to you.
Yeah, and matter of fact, it's interesting, you know, what pops in my mind when you're saying that, and like before we're talking ahead of time too, you know, I've done a few talks with organizations and groups, you know, with battered women and things like that. And, you know, I'm the one that's going to tell you how to hopefully recognize it before it hits that level. Because for me, the way I give labels and meanings and understandings of human behavior, it's kind of like, you know, if you ever saw the movie The Matrix, you kind of see the code behind everything around you. So I kind of like boiling it down so you can kind of see through the veils of deception or misleading things that people might put on if they're in an unhealthy relationship, so you can recognize it quicker in your life and start making decisions that are healthier for you.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, long-term listeners of this podcast will know we talk a lot about human behavior and about the universal concepts. Rapport is something that I'd like to dive into with you later on, maybe, because in what I teach from a verbal de-escalation point of view, about talking people down, it started off as kind of a how do we modernize verbal judo a little bit, and one thing that I came across was that the ability to establish rapport quickly is one of the best ways you can de-escalate someone who's angry.
Yeah, it's the first step to me. It's kind of why it was my first book, because when you first start interacting with human beings and making it, or if it's a requirement as part of your life and profession, you know you have to start with rapport. That's what happens in the first microseconds all the way up to the first couple minutes. And then what I found is that, well, where do you go after rapport? Well, after rapport, you move into trust, from trust relationships. From relationships, now it's kind of reversing. Now you're starting to assess where are we at in this relationship. So yeah, it was a continuum for me. Absolutely. And it does start with rapport.
Yeah. It's hard to influence anybody if they don't like you.
And the liking comes into, I do a lot of, I definitely do a lot of talking on liking, because liking or disliking automatically gives an individual a confirmation bias, which is very difficult and challenging to overcome. Mm-hmm. And that's where some of us can really make some, you know, unhealthy decisions in our lives, especially if we link liking, you know, thinking of the world of violence. You know, if someone could say they like someone, but what they're actually might be doing in an unhealthy relationship is they believe this person is fulfilling a need that they have that they're not getting. And so now they're having a confirmation bias that I need this person to fulfill this vacancy in my life and no one else can do it. And that is unhealthy. If it's leading to the emotions, the negative emotions, which I think the most horrible emotion a human being can put on themselves or allow someone to put on them is shame. Mm-hmm. Shame is a very powerful emotion. It is a very powerful and manipulating emotion. Matter of fact, I do a lot of work. I'm a board member with the Innocent Lives Foundation. And we uncover anonymous predators online that are, you know, trafficking in, you know, children as well as pornography, and they're horrendous human beings. And one of their manipulation tools they use very effectively is shame, and it's very, very damaging. And so I'd imagine in the world of domestic violence and everything like that, a lot of predators are using shame in a very powerful way and hurting people.
Well, absolutely. I mean, a lot of long-term abuse is to do with emotional manipulation. It's not to do with physical control. It's
absolutely.
Physical control is a finite resource. You can only physically control someone for so long. It's the emotional shackles that you apply that can last long-term and I guess from a predator's point of view, pay long-term dividends. Shame and guilt and fear and that sense of needing and insecurity about what will happen if I don't have the abuser in my life. I mean, all these sorts of things are, yeah, they're planted whether deliberately or intuitively by predators. So what I'd like to do, just to focus on your most recent book, because I think there's a lot of great stuff in there, and I'd like to sort of break it down. Obviously, I don't want to give away all your IP, but
you can give it all away. I'm a big, you know, as my good friend Joe Navarro, another great behaviorist, you know, that's my mentor and guide, says, you know, if you have a little bit of information, at least one person could benefit from. Shame on you for not getting it to them. So, and that's why I love doing podcasts. That's why I love, you know, folks like you that get great information out there. Anything you want to know, I'll share it. I'll find one or two people maybe later on in life that want to pay for it too. That'd be good.
Well, look, you know what? I don't think the 45 minutes to an hour that we're going to be talking about it is going to give away the entire.
No, it definitely won't.
So, yeah, go buy the book. If you're listening right now, pause the podcast, go buy the book, and then listen to this. There you go. All right. So what I would like to do is just sort of go step by step through your six signs of behavioral prediction and just get you to, I guess, give the cliff notes of what that means.
Sure.
And we'll try and break them down and how we can may apply this in our relationships, whether it's personal relationships, work relationships, as we mentioned offline. I'm particularly interested in this when it comes to who's worthy of our trust as a parent. Looking at who do we invite into our family, because we know that that abusers are most commonly known to the victim, right? So we know that the person who is as sort of uncomfortable it is to say, the person most likely to abuse your children is not going to be a stranger jumping out of the bushes outside the 7-Eleven. The person most likely to abuse your child is someone you've invited into your family's life. So looking at who's worthy of trust, I think it is incredibly important and a perhaps underappreciated skill or something we should be taught that we're not. So let's jump into the first sign that you mentioned in your book is vesting. So for those who've never heard this term before, and I will admit I'd never come across that particular phrasing of vesting. What is vesting?
Vesting, it's so funny you mention that too, because literally I always have to, at the end of a podcast or an interview or something, did everyone understand the things I was saying? Because for some reason, I tend to come up with my own words or ways of using them. My wife reminds me of this all the time. I mean, these are real words I use, except for one in the book, and that you'll probably get to. But yeah, vesting is how much is, you know, as I'm using in the book, how much is someone's deeds, actions, and words, are they vested in your success as they are their own? In other words, are they willing to put forth resources, effort, and their own relationships they have towards your success without any expectation of reciprocity? You know, in the workplace, you know, someone that's vested in your success is willing to call in favors for you. They're willing to call friends on your behalf to get you a certain position. They're willing to expend their resources in terms of you, it might overlap with their priorities and what's in their best interest, but they're willing to go out on the limb for you. That's someone who's vested. You know, matter of fact, the example I use in the book is Leo, who's a confidential human source of mine, brand new to me in the bureau. And he had been a confidential source for the bureau for a long time. I think when I got him, you know, it's about 25 years, been a bureau source since 1965. You know, and for those that don't know yet, yeah, I worked in the world of counterintelligence. I recruited spies. I ran a behavioral analysis program for that. And so my whole job was spy recruiting. And so what Leo did when he first met me, his success in his mind, he had been an immigrant to our country and he wanted to be this great patriot and continue to be a great patriot. But he knew for him to be successful in being a great patriot, he needed to work with an agent that had to be successful as well so that his bosses would allow him the leeway to do great operations together. So he knew that he was there to help me be successful because in the end, if I was successful, he'd be successful. So he actually went about above and beyond to do things that were good for me in my career, which was good for national security and then also ultimately good for him. So that's a sign of vesting.
So they're willing to, I guess, invest in you. I mean, they're willing to provide what they have, their networks or their advice or whatever, with purely for your benefit.
And great examples, you know, and you mentioned before we start, you know, leaders, you know, great leaders vest in their people by sending them the training, sending them the conferences, giving them incentives, giving them great opportunities, great resources, you know, so that's a sign of vesting in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, the company that I currently work for and I've worked for the past couple of years, the one thing that really attracted me to that culture is that there was a lot of investment in the individuals. And for me personally, there's a lot of encouragement for me to continue to grow my own personal brand, which other employers had dissuaded because they didn't want me to be able to go out on my own. But current company recognizes that the more my personal brand grows, the more value I provide to the company. So,
you know, because what they're doing is they're doing and they're providing you, and this is what the sign is really good at. They're demonstrating what every single human being on this planet is genetically and biologically coded to want and crave. And that is, you want to be affiliated with meaningful groups and organizations that hold, we need to feel part of a tribe for our survival. And then we also want to be valued by that tribe. And so by vesting in you, they're demonstrating that they value you. And so your brain's rewarding you with dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, all the pleasure centers are firing because they're valuing you and they're demonstrating it through their vesting. So yeah, that's a great sign.
Yeah. The application of vesting that I saw immediately to my sort of world says, I never get over the idea of saying my world of violence, because it's such a weird thing to say as a relatively well-adjusted person, self-diagnosed, we see this sometimes in relationships where one party is giving everything to the other to try and enhance the other person's career or their prospects, but there's nothing reciprocal. Where like you can have, you know, I'm going to use the typical gendered examples just because it's easier. But we might have a younger female and an older male, and the younger female comes in, does everything possible to make the male's career successful, to provide for them, to look after them, to make sure their needs are met, but there is nothing coming back the other way. Unless it has a direct correlation and benefit to the male's success, there's nothing coming back the other way. So the female wants to start a business, wants to work from home, something like that, then there's no support whatsoever. And I kind of drew that connection there. If it's a one-way relationship, then they really, you're actually kind of a utilitarian resource. You're not a partner.
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it's all about balance. You know, everything's need to be reciprocated. And if it's not even reciprocated, maybe in one of the signs, it better be reciprocated in another. Because, you know, not everyone has the same skill sets in the same areas required, you know, to do that. But, you know, a good healthy relationship will make it up into some of the other signs, you know, because we don't have to have all of them. But if we have enough and we're making an effort, and that's the most important thing, I think, to realize with human beings, no one's got this all down perfect. There hasn't been anyone to walk this planet that has. But if you make the effort, boy, it goes a long way with another human being. They're just looking for effort, not necessarily perfection.
Mm, that's a good quotable for you. It's looking for effort, not perfection. There you go. It's
most healthy people, by the way.
Careful speaking like that, you'll end up on Oprah.
Wouldn't that be great? Sell a few more books.
She gives them all away, but hopefully she pays you for them. All right. The next sign of behavioral prediction was longevity. So let's just give a quick breakdown of what longevity is.
Yeah, longevity is kind of like vesting in the sense that it takes a little bit more time to kind of see if longevity exists. But longevity is when someone, again, through demonstrating actions, words, and deeds, that they see this relationship as long-standing. You know, again, let's go to the workplace. This is someone who starts including you in traditions. They bring you on company retreats. They send you to training. A good example during COVID is if you're scheduled to go to a conference like in a couple of weeks and they rescheduled a year from now, they immediately put you on that list, and so they give you rain checks for things. Other traditions that used to exist before COVID, you know, is like a weekly happy hour or monthly dinner, any sort of get together. Well, now, you know, are they doing online book clubs with you? Are they doing online happy hours? You know, again, just investing, I mean, demonstrating through those actions that they see the relationship as long-term things. Again, long-term projects. I remember when I got to New York, you know, work in the world of counterintelligence. It's not just hey, you arrest someone, put them in jail next. It's long-term operations, because it's kind of like sales in the finance world. It takes sometimes a couple years to work with a potential client before they're willing to trust you with their lives investments. And so it takes some time to do that. And so a great sign of that is, you know, longevity.
Yeah. And I guess it's the, as I read into it anyway, it's like you're at least getting a sense that they expect this to be a long-term engagement. Like they're not just going to chew you up and spit you out and get what they can out of your short term. It's like they're showing signs that they're prepared to play the long game with you.
Here's what's really good about it, though, too. You know, again, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing if they don't show signs of longevity. And it kind of goes to one of the things you said at the beginning that spiked my, hey, here's how I deal with, you know, challenging people or people that might be deceptive, you know, and how do we trust people that we bring into our families, is transparency. If it's going to be a quick in and out, and podcasting is a great example of it. We trust each other, barely know each other, and we know at the end of this podcast, you know, we'll make each other available for each other's lives, but our priorities no longer overlap for a period of time. But that's actually a stated thing, so there's transparency about it, so there's not a mismanagement of longevity of expectation. Now, there's I'm not expecting you to call me next week and say, hey, Robin, come on the podcast again. In other words, we're not having a weekly podcast engagement. We're going to be talking about all these things. You know, and so that's actually a sign of both longevity, no signs of longevity, but it doesn't hinder a good, healthy, trusting relationship because it's full of open, honest communication with transparency, which is one of my requirements for every single trusting relationship is open, honest communication with transparency.
Yeah. And that, man, that is so important what you said there. We tend to think in this black and white context of if they don't do this, then they're no good for me. But yeah, sometimes short-term relationships are exactly what you need. Yeah, they can
be exactly what business calls for. Yeah. You know, and so what that's actually, you know, it's a great lead into, you know, these six signs of predicting behavior. It's not about, you know, any sort of manipulation so I can figure out what you're going to do so I can get ahead of you and win. It's about a deep understanding of you and where you're at in regards to me. Because once I understand that, I can manage my expectations. I can adjust myself accordingly. Because when I adjust my expectations according to what I can reasonably predict your expectations are, that's going to be a healthy relationship. Because then I'm not way up here thinking it's going to be one thing and you're down here thinking it's going to be another. Because that just builds resentment and frustration and all those negative emotions.
And I think just to tie that one into relationships or interpersonal relationships again, It's not like we have to say, well, if you're dating someone and they don't immediately want to talk about marriage and kids, that they're not the right person for you, right? I mean, everyone's trying to feel each other out and they're trying to determine what, I mean, these things sneak up on you.
And you're accounting for one of the things that people need to account for when they're trying to establish relationships, especially personal relationships, is recognizing the tempo of the other person and not pushing the tempo outside of their comfort zone.
That's actually a really good way of phrasing that. You know, even in business, I found that sometimes where, especially salespeople can come in and they want the sale today, but you know, I'm not buying yet. Like I would like to know if I can trust you so that when I do have an opportunity, I can call upon you. But if you're just trying to push me today,
And here's what the greatest salespeople do that actually might have an overbearing boss or have to make quotas. And so they don't have time for you to think and ruminate on the tempo that you have. And it's incongruent with the salesperson. But if the salesperson senses that your tempo is not moving at his pace, a good one will say, hey, I understand this is a lot to ask in a short amount of time. And I can kind of tell I'm putting a little too much pressure on you. Here's what's going on behind the scenes. You know, I do have the sales quota. We have this coming up. But I'll tell you what, if this is not good for you today, let me know. I'll make a little note, you know, in my file to not be a bother to you. But if you'd like to spend some more time with me, maybe next year month or months after, let's get together then so I can actually show you I am the guy that you can trust to move forward with. You just let me know what you want to do. Because then what did I do? I thought his thoughts and opinions, talked in terms of his priorities and his tempo. I validated him that I wasn't trying to push him and I empowered him with choices. And when you include one of those four things in everything you do and say, the entire conversation shifts from you to them. And when it's all about them, again, their brain is rewarding because you just demonstrated value. You just demonstrated affiliation. Who wouldn't want to come back to that?
Yeah. And look, it's interesting that we end up detouring, talking about sales for a second, because one of the things that I'm always encouraging when people want to understand how predators think or how predators manipulate is look at salespeople. I mean, the way that we influence and the way that we exert control over people in terms of controlling their behaviors, I mean, that's been refined in sales. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with ill intent. I mean, as long as what I'm trying to sell you, I know will benefit you. And I'm just trying to break down the defenses to get it to you. That's great. But I mean, that's the same way that people manipulate anyone for anything.
The challenge is that the salesperson that comes across like the creepy car salesman thinks he knows what's good for you. The great salesperson helps the person discover what they think is good for them. And that great salesperson provides them a resource in terms of priority that person just discovered.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Actually, Robert Cialdini's work was very interesting. It's his two books, Influence and Persuasion. I highly recommend. And I recommend it, even if you have no interest in the corporate world whatsoever, read it just to understand how human beings can manipulate each other. And manipulation gets a bad rep. I mean, manipulation is just about guiding decisions.
Right. I'm the counterintelligence spy recruiter guy that will tell you I am 100% anti-manipulation. And the fail safes I have in there to prevent that is when I'm working, whether I'm using my code of trust to inspire trust or whether I'm trying to size you up or all these things, it's about understanding you at a deep level. And I have these three anchors that I use when I'm thinking about what I'm about to do or say. Is it going to do these things? Is it going to help or hinder a healthy professional relationship? Step two, am I using open, honest communication with transparency? Because it's not going to be a healthy relationship without that. And the three, this is my fail safe to make sure I'm not doing this for my game, but I'm actually doing what I said, what Joe Navarro says. You know, if you have information and resources that someone else could benefit from, shame on you for not getting to them. So I make myself an available resource for the success and prosperity of others with no expectation of reciprocity. Again, no, manipulation to me is not good or bad. It's just a cause and effect. A lot of times, if you're using it in a way that you're really putting pressure on, you're going to have buyer's remorse from that individual at some point. You have buyer's remorse, your brand is going to go down the tank. No brand, no referrals. And then it becomes a struggle to make cold calls. It becomes a struggle to continue to be prosperous. And this is both personally and professionally.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the number three, which was reliability. And I think this is one where we sort of, a lot of people go, well, I know that people being reliable is important, but what are some of the things we should be actually looking for to determine whether someone is reliable or they're not reliable?
Yeah, I love this one too. It's reliability, as I define it for this thing, is a combination of competence as well as diligence. Competence, great example is if someone puts on their resume, they should be able to actually do the task they say they're going to. Are they competent in tasks doing whatever it is that they say they can do? So that's the first thing is, you know, of reliability is they're competent, that they actually have the skill set required, or they know where to get the skill set, they have tools and all that. Now, the diligence is the other half of the equation, because just because someone can do something doesn't mean they're actually going to do something. So diligence is the energy, the forthrightness, the ability to move forward and take action on the things they actually say they're going to do on a timeline that establishes, you know, that's established by someone else. So it's a combination of both great skill sets and great diligence to move forward with those skill sets.
And I think that that competence is something I haven't, from memory, I haven't heard anyone talk about when it comes to reliability. It's like, it's almost like the, as long as they continue to make the effort, they're reliable. But at some point you need them to actually make an effort that counts. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Effort's fantastic. But if effort doesn't, you know, result in bottom lines and missions and priorities getting accomplished, then it's kind of a waste. Matter of fact, I'd say right now during, you know, everyone doing a lot of remote learning as well as remote working, you know, reliability is, that's being tested. You know, because it's a new work environment for a lot of people. There's a lot of distractions in the homes. It generally takes a human being anywhere from, you know, 3 to 6 months to adjust to a new way of life. You know, so right now, you know, I work with a lot of companies like yourself, and I saw things kind of stopped for a while as companies were trying to figure out, can we do this? And then they saw we can do this because literally the technology and the capabilities we're all using has always been there. The greatest thing is COVID did not require us to invent anything new to do this. It required us to utilize the tools we had in a much broader, broader way. Now what happened is now people actually have to learn, can we actually do this in a new environment? Can we bifurcate our days, you know, so that we can take care if we have kids at home, if we have both spouses at home, and we're being distracted with, if we have yard work to do, we have things on the TV, we have houses falling apart, we have neighbors banging on the front door, we're getting all deliveries at home, as well as maintain a job on a schedule of someone else setting. So that's what really shifted. But what's being tested in there, and I think companies are doing a great job, is, all right, here's a task that I know you can do, and you say you can do, and you've demonstrated you can do. Now what's being tested really is the diligence to follow through on it.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think if we tie this back into our personal lives, if I'm looking at you know, someone that I want to trust with my kids, like, can I trust them to show up? Can I trust them that they're responsible? I mean, like everything about them, like, do they drive safely? Do they carry themselves with an element of, are they an adult, or are they behaving in such a way that you're like, where are these inconsistencies, like that I'm observing in other areas? Could they affect whether I can trust them with my children or not? And as you said, absolutely, reliability, it's competence plus, can I trust them to show up?
Diligence, right? And that kind of leads into the actions, sign too, is because, it's all about, to me, past patterns and key behaviors. If you're, on the personal side, I mean, most of the stuff I use on the personal side with my whole family and friends as well, and it's one of those things that if you observe a negative behavior once or twice, and you start making excuses or living with a thing called hope they'll be better next time, you're really setting yourself up for some really bad effect. Because the likelihood of them changing their behavior without an outside stimulus causing them to do it is slim to none.
I'd like to pick your brain on that a little bit about how actions in other areas of their lives does that have a? I'm trying to find the way. I'm stumbling over my question, but let's say we observe incongruent behavior in other aspects of their life, maybe in their home life. And now we're wondering whether this is going to impact us at work. Because one of the things that I tend to caution people about with relationships is if a person is fired regularly from their job, then perhaps you should expect that they're not going to be very good in their personal life as well. Like, there might be other issues at play here. It's not just a work-related issue necessarily. How do you sort of assess someone on their whole of life, not just work life, personal life, friend life, whatever?
Yeah, it's a great point because I do talk about this, and I tend to try to, if you are showing some questionable behavior in one lane of your life, it doesn't mean I'm going to judge that every other lane in your life is probably sideways as well. But what it does do, it causes me to slow down and take a look at every other lane in your life to see what's going on. Because now, if every other land in your life seems like you're making completely sane, healthy choices and decisions, you're reliable, you're competent, and you're demonstrating all the other signs of trustworthiness, then it kind of makes me then go back to and really focus on what's really going on at work, on the challenges there. Is there, and this is where I'll dive deep, because I have the philosophy in life, I do not allow anyone to bother me. In other words, if you're doing something that seems off and it's a little off-putting in some way, I'm going to dive deep to try to figure you out to understand why. Because there's something going on that causes you an inappropriate behavior that is not socially acceptable in some way. So I like to try to figure out and understand what that is. Because once I understand what it is, my understanding of you, of your context goes up, my tolerance and acceptance goes up. And then we can actually have a lot easier conversations about the challenges you're having. And then I, most importantly too, I can then make healthier decisions for myself and my family on whether you're going to be included with it or not. But I'll slow down. If I see some incongruencies, I'm going to slow down. And I've had this with family members where I saw, I'm not naming names on anything, kids in high school, what I perceived as a potentially unhealthy relationship. And what it was I didn't have a lot of transparency on what was going on and reasons why. And every time I probed for transparency, there were excuses. And I don't do that. If you're looking to have a healthy relationship with someone in my family, and you're not willing to be transparent about, a dad's questions, and not even accusatory, just seeking to understand, because that's all life is. I'm not judging, people in my life that are good, healthy people, make great, healthy relationships, choices for healthy people in their lives. They don't have to align with me politically or anything else. I don't care, because when the people I know have consistent patterns of choosing good, healthy people in their lives, I now know what normal looks like for them. And of all sudden, if a human being deviates from a norm that I've now established with these people, that makes me stop and say, hey, what's going on here with this person? Because there's a deviation from the norm. And so as I start trying to explore for transparency, so I can actually see what this other person sees in them, that's all it is. I just want to see what you see. That's a line I use. I just want to see the greatness you see. Help me see that greatness. Here are my questions. Here's my look for transparency. And if I don't get that back, I'm saying, what's going sideways? There's something not right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, it's so profound. I love that phrase, that help me see what you see, or let me see that good side of you, because you know, and this is a side journey into something that's completely trivial compared to what we're actually talking about. But the show Cobra Kai, that's just been huge,
right? Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Big fans. I grew up with this.
I love it. Yeah. It's
love Johnny. Johnny's a great guy.
but when you look at that show, I mean, that is a case of like everybody's why I love that show is that they've done such a good job of writing the show that everybody is a human being. There's three dimensions.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. And no right, no wrong. Everyone's got great strengths. Everyone's got things they're working on.
100%.
Matter of fact, that's why, you know, my framing when I'm trying to use language, that's why I'm always looking for everyone's greatness. I know I'll find something you suck at. Everyone sucks at something. Everyone's got an insecurity. Stop, you know, don't worry about that. If you need it, it's there. Discover their greatness first. Assume their greatness in a lot of areas. You know, because if you start a conversation with someone that you think is making poor choices in healthy relationships, the worst thing you can do, because ultimately, if you're trying to inspire them to listen to you rather than convince them, because you're never going to convince them to listen to you, because convincing is about what I want. Inspiration is about what they want. And if I'm trying to inspire them to listen to the things I'm hoping is sharing with them, I got to make it about them. And the only way I'm going to make it about them, I have to start out with what I call a specific non-judgmental validation of a strength, attribute, or action. And only way I can do that is to find your greatness. And here's a great assumption. Most people think that they do, in general, make good choices in friends and people. Mm-hmm. And if I immediately go in negating that and judging their choices, I'm already done. I might as well just stop talking because they're not going to listen to a word I say. So I'll just start out with validating. You make great choices in friends. I think they're all fantastic. I've enjoyed getting to know each one of them. Help me understand. I'm only reason I'm not seeing that here is because I just don't know this person well enough. Help me see what you see. Share with me, because I love the greatness in all your friends. You've done a great job of sharing it with me, and I enjoy them when they come over the home, house, share meals. Help me see what you see. And if they struggle to do that, that's interesting.
The context is so important, right? I mean,
it's everything.
Look, we have this conversation corporately, and apologies for listeners that are like, I don't care about your corporate life, but you have people that just interview really poorly, right? Yeah, within a certain context, they just don't perform. But if you had a chance to actually work with the person, you go, wow, you're actually really good at this, but you just suck at telling me in front of a panel, especially if the panel's on Zoom, which is even worse now.
They just don't have practice yet.
Yeah, exactly, right? But there's a certain context. So you might be having doubts about, let's say, a teenage boyfriend.
I didn't say it was a boyfriend, not me. I didn't say that.
hypothetically,
yes.
But they're just not performing well under that interview context, right? So it might just be a matter of like, well, let's change the context of this conversation and see if I can see a different side of you.
Right, because I have a limited optic. You know, my optic is optic from my standpoint. So let me see it from your optic.
Yeah. You know? And we all have our own biases and heuristics that we're using and that we're evaluating. And yeah, as a father, like your number one priority is always going to be the welfare of your children. So I mean, you're heavily weighting that when it comes to your decision making and how you're viewing things. So,
and the greatest challenge with it too, I found, and again, this was many years ago. You know, both my kids are grown out of the house. The greatest challenge I had, because again, I mentioned it before, my number one goal. An objective is to maintain a good, healthy, strong relationship. My number two was always, and still is, open, honest communication, transparency. When you start poking at a potential issue with someone, there's a chance that you're going to blow that healthy relationship from their perspective. It takes a great amount of slowing down and thoughtful contemplation of your words and the way you ask questions. Because I never tell anyone my thoughts and opinions. I seek theirs because I love asking what I call discovery questions, having just people discover on their own what potential challenges they're facing, because they're never going to listen. No one, very few people listen to someone else. You know, most of the time people like coming up with their own methods on things. And the only way they do that is through their own experiential education. You know, if you can help people get through the experience and through your questions so they can think their way through it in a healthier way, that's a beautiful journey. So slowing down and doing that in a non-judgmental way is, can be very, very challenging, but that's why, you know, everything requires relationships. So, you know, me standing alone, I will fail majestically. You know, I have a wife, I have friends, you know, I have what I call in life beta testers, people that might not be emotionally attached to the outcome that I'm emotionally attached to. So they are more objective than I am. They lack confirmation bias one way or the other. Granted, I have lots of tools and muscle memory to overcome that in myself, but I know I am not perfect at it. I am better than the average bear, maybe, but definitely got a long way to go. You know, especially when it comes to family and loved ones, and it's also very challenging to recognize too. Even when I think I'm doing a fantastic job, you know, my wife she's my beta tester for things I write, things I put out, everything. And I'll have her read something, and she goes, "You cannot say that." I go, "Really? Why?" And she goes, "Because blah blah blah." And I'm like, "I don't see that." And she goes, "Yep, but don't do it." I'm like, "Okay."
Having that trusted advisor is incredibly important, because we can just be too close, you know,
having one or two at work and one or two in your personal life at least it's critical if you want to do the best you can for others, is maintain a great beta tester and someone that is actually vested in your success and wants to see you succeed, but also has the ability to give you hard truths when you ask for hard truths.
Mm. And I think a lot of that comes down to empowering someone with the freedom to give you those hard truths, because you've got to be able to receive it, or else the first time they do it and you don't appreciate it, then you've kind of soured that whole relationship. It's not going to change. Not going to happen again.
Yeah, my wife has backed away from giving me advice a few times, because I'll argue it sometimes, and I've learned to stop arguing when my family has input on something, especially, you know, because, you know, it's, you know, especially with business, when you work from home, you know, I get a lot of input on things, and it's hard to take something, especially when you sunk a lot of time and effort into doing something. I go, "Well, that's for crap." I'm like, it's like, dang it.
But you just don't know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Get immediately defensive. I just wanted to pause here and go back to the discovery questions, because I found that really interesting. And look, on a personal level, I've had very, very close relatives that have been involved in abusive relationships and made routinely bad choices, right? Objectively bad choices over a long period of time. And you can try all these interventions of, "You need to stop doing this. This is what you're doing wrong. This is why, you know, these are the kinds of people that you're associating with." And it just doesn't work. It's sometimes a bit of a cop-out to say, "Well, you can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves." But how do you help them help themselves? Yeah, how do you get them to that point themselves? So how do you do that?
I think the first question you ask when you're objectively looking at what's going on and you start seeing and witnessing the pain and trauma they're having, whether it's physical or emotional, obviously, and you said it starts out emotional, is I just ask questions about, what is it you're trying to achieve? Where is it you see yourself? I mean, if you could paint yourself, you know, where you see yourself in 5 years, what do you want to do? What's your ideal situation at, you know, and do you like how you feel today? Do you like how you feel day in and day out? And you got to be very congruent with your non-judgmental question, as well as your non-verbal non-judgmental as well. You know, and this is where you're going to demonstrate empathy, and empathy is non-judgmental curiosity about their context. And once I understand and help them, because a lot of times people don't know what it is they're trying to achieve or where they're trying to go. So part of the discovery process is start thinking about, where do I see myself in a few years? I remember, I mean, years ago when I first started understanding and doing discovery questions, I was on actually an operation down in Florida in the United States. And I'm at a bar, you know, with a colleague of mine. And I was just talking to the female bartender there. And I said the same thing, you know, I'm always seeking to understand, you know, I said, "Hey, you know, ma'am, you know, where, you know, is this your only job? Is this part-time? You know, what else do you do? And she goes, oh, I'm trying to go to school, but I don't have a lot of money for this. I said, oh, really? Tell me, help me understand why. She says, well, you know, my boyfriend, you know, lives at home with me. He doesn't work. He's not doing a whole lot. So I'm really having to work here double shift to pay for him and me to be together. I said, how's that make you feel? She goes, it's frustrating as all heck. I said, do you feel that every day? And she goes, yeah, pretty much. I said, so in your ideal world, would you work less and go to school? She goes, yes. I said, so you basically need more money. In order to have more money, you just need to live in a house that you're not paying rent for and have opportunities to not, you know, have someone else that you're paying for as well. Is that right? She goes, yes. I said, do you have any family members anywhere that, you know, that you can, would support you in that effort? And she goes, well, my dad lives up in Jacksonville. I said, have you talked to him about it? No. I said, oh, that's interesting. You know, and at the end of it, you know, at the end of the day, she goes, you know, and she came back after a while. I called my dad on the phone, and I'm actually going to go see him this weekend. We're going to talk about what we can do in the future.
Wow.
Again, you know, because I didn't tell her what to do. It's like anyone, you can't tell people what to do. Everyone's on their own path. And when people get over their fact that no one's right or wrong. They just are, you know, everyone's living this path. And if you can just be that resource for them to kind of get unstuck sometimes, because life is movement, life is change, and we can't control the tempo of change. This year is a great example. We cannot control the tempo of change in the year 2020. You know, your choice is to keep up with it the best you can or not. And if you don't keep up with it, you're going to have a lot of negative emotions. You're going to have a lot of negative consequences. And the way you keep up with it is through healthy relationships to get you through, because everyone has those moments. And the way we help each other is help each other with discovery questions. You know, just someone that can objectively sit back, ask you what it is you're trying to achieve, what goals you're trying to do. And then they ask that next question. So help me understand, is what you're doing today helping or hindering you getting to what it is you're trying to achieve? Mm. And they come up with the answer for themselves.
I love that. This is actually, it's almost like a free parenting counseling session for me. I'm taking so much of what you're saying. I'm like, oh, let's keep that in the pocket for, I've got four daughters, right? So I've got to,
always, it's perfect too. It's what you said, you know, always remember this: healthy things are not complicated. Mm-hmm. And when you boil it down, like we're just talking, isn't this all just common sense?
Yeah. We overthink it though. Don't we? We try to find patterns where there aren't any, or we try to,
A lot of times overthinking comes from trying to rationalize the decisions we're making. And if you have to over-rationalize the decision you're making, it's probably not a healthy decision anyway.
Probably wasn't a rational decision.
All right,
excellent. So just to make sure we cover off on the final 6 points, I don't want to introduce 6 points and cover four of them because we got sidetracked. But
it's all included. It's actually literally all included, though. It wasn't a sidetrack to me. It's all important.
I think we covered off on actions fairly well. The last two were language and stability. So let's quickly dive into language. What do you look for in language to determine trustworthiness?
Beautiful. And so I kind of mentioned a little bit already, but language is, you know, for the language that you want to use, matter of fact, for in the code of trust, it's technique four, and that is use language to make it about the other person. So you demonstrate value and affiliation. So I want to make sure that when it's about me inspiring trust, I want to make sure I'm seeking their thoughts and opinions, talking in terms of their priorities, because here's, you know, going back to Robert Cialdini's book, you know, human beings are extremely predictable. We will always act in our own best interest in terms of safety, security, and prosperity / priorities. So I want to make sure I'm talking in terms of their priorities. Three, I'm going to validate them without judging them, because that's where I have that non-judgmental curiosity. And finally, I'm going to give them choices. Each one of those four things shifts the focus from myself to on the other person. So language in sign five here, in sizing people up, are they using that beautiful language with me? And so those are easy things to see. Are they making that conversation about me by seeking my thoughts and opinions, talking in terms of what's important to me? Are they validating me and seeking to understand and being curious about me or judging me? And finally, are they giving me choices with how to move forward with things? So that's what language is.
Yeah.
And that's a lot where of the focus is.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last one was stability.
Stability is the catch-all for everything. And I think this is great for audience in dealing with violence is emotional stability. During times of stress, Do they maintain good cognitive thought? And even if they go off the rails quickly, do they rapidly come back to cognitive thought? Do they come back to cause and effect of human behavior? Do they come back to making healthy choices, making healthy statements, and being a resource for others? Or are they just going into complete survival mode, lashing out and taking people down with them? So emotional stability is my catch-all. Part of emotional stability, I'm also going to put in there emotional self-awareness, because someone asked me this the other day. So who's my tribe of folks that I generally hang out with? Who are my friends in general? And I've never, ever liked or disliked anyone from a title or position they've held, because that to me is kind of meaningless, because it's never about your title and position, how you make people feel about yourself. It's how you make people about themselves. And the people that do that the best are the ones that are most self-aware. In other words, they're very self-aware about what their strengths are and how to bring those strengths to bear for others. They're also very aware of their own deficiencies and weaknesses. And they have a plan in place to overcome them. They also have an ability to not only understand themselves, but they understand how the rest of the world sees them as well. And they don't judge it. They don't lash out of it. They have humility. They can use a lot of self-deprecating humor because they just are secure in who they are. And matter of fact, I always say my three books are my three manuals on how not to be the narcissist I was born to be.
I like that. You need to repackage that as a series, and
it basically is my series. I remember years ago when I worked at Quantico, when I first came up I first did a bunch of articles for a law enforcement bulletin, and then when I came up, it's not all about me, the first book on quick rapport, I remember this great instructor, great teacher, mentor, and guide, she said to me, she said, Robin, you're the only person that could have written this book. I said, what do you mean? Because you needed it more than anyone else. And I said, there you go. And my wife generally holds up, it's not all about me, once or twice a week, saying, hey, remember this?
That's tremendous. The last question I have for you, Robin, it wasn't something I even planned to ask, but as I was sort of thinking about what I'd like to pick your brain about, this came to mind. With everything that's going on at the moment globally, and certainly for you in the US, something I've been asked about a lot recently is about how our relationships with people are changing. And a large part of what I keep coming back to is trust, that we've kind of lost trust in institutions. I think back, it wasn't that long ago, I felt like we trusted mainstream media. we could trust whether we knew it or not, we kind of placed some sort of weight in the words of politicians. We trusted authority figures. And now I feel like that has definitely ebbed away, in that people are now distrustful of everything. No one trusts mainstream media unless it's their channel of choice. And even then, like the smart ones, the centralists will still distrust everything because it's all profit driven. We certainly don't trust our politicians. We don't trust law enforcement. We don't trust anybody. What impact does that have on how we actually interact with each other when we don't have this universal source of trust?
Yeah, it's a great question. It can erode a society. There is no doubt. But what I also think, so I am, as a friend of mine, Chris Hagnaggi, says, I am Mr. Positivity, Captain Positive. I mean, I'm always looking and seeing what is going right. And you're right, all these lack of trust in institutions and people and organizations and government, it's at an all-time high, there's no doubt. Well, and this reason that it's an all-time high is because our ability to know all these things is also at an all-time high. So it wasn't that all of a sudden people went to being completely trustworthy to completely untrustworthy. It's no, actually just people are profiting on letting us know about it. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. But as a society, though, I think I don't know what your effect has been, but when I look around at my friends and my family, we've drawn closer together. The close relationships we have either have matured into even closer ones, and we've assessed others maybe not as being as close as I thought they were. And the other thing too is, and you said it, and we've done this the entire time together, is I think people are getting a lot better at assessing. We've kind of slowed down because we've become more cautious, because we're not as trusting. So we're actually looking for things like we're providing here today. What do I look for? I want to trust. I want to be connected with people. And how do I do that? And believe it or not, most people in the world are not trying to take advantage of you. Yep. And if by chance you happen to be taken advantage of, it was very, very rarely done to you. It just happened to be you got in the way of the other person. You know, because remember, we are always acting in our own best interest, and people are acting on their own insecurities. And so I always say I do not allow myself to be collateral damage in anyone else's insecurities. Doesn't mean that, you know, you're a bad person and you took advantage of me. I just happen to be the one you took advantage of. So what did I do to get in your way? What did I do to be in the wrong place at the wrong time? You know, so my full accountability, because now I also do know that, hey, you have a couple data points of being the type of person that I can't rely on, that is going to take advantage of, because I guarantee you this, if you took advantage of me, you're going to take advantage of someone else. Yeah. That's just in your nature at this point in time. So I just need to get some distance from that unhealthy. But that's what I do. And I think that's what we do in these times. You know, we slow down. We hold our tight, healthy relationships close. We foster as many as we can by doing these things. We manage our expectations of others, realizing that, you know, kind of like we're saying, you know, in Cobra Kai, there is no one perfect. You know, the ones I'm looking for are the ones that are self-aware enough to know that they're not perfect and they're making an effort and they have a plan and they're asking your help for it. Oh my gosh, who wouldn't want to be around someone like that?
Yeah, perfect. All right, Robin, if people want to get a hold of you, they want to buy your books, or they want to engage you to speak or to consult with their company, how do they get a hold of you? Where can they find more about you?
Great one-stop shopping, peopleformula.com. I do my best to put as much content in there as possible. I put great links to podcasts like yours on there for folks that might not have the resources and they want some good skills and tips, all the way from, you know, my online training courses you can take for as little, you know, like about $90, all the way up to the higher premium stuff. Some video links on there as well. I have I got a blog postings on there, and also you can reach out to me. Believe it or not, it's hard, you know, when you're the person living this life, and you see, if you were to talk to me any other way, any other time, I'm exactly the same person. You know, there is no different Robin. And people sometimes get intimidated. Oh, guys, you know, this position, I can't talk. No, reach out, you know. And if you have a question, if you have a concern, if I can give you a quick answer, something, I'll answer it. So by all means, reach out, contact me. And if nothing else, just want to check out the content, peopleformula.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to do some bonus questions for the Patreon subscribers. But for those who are here, thank you very much, Robin Drake.
Thank you. I'm excited. Thank you.
Thank you once again to Robin Drake, author of Sizing People Up. I highly recommend you check that book out if you are interested in how to trust people, who to trust, why to trust them, what signs to look for to see whether someone is trustworthy. It's a fantastic resource. Robin was also kind enough to contribute 20 minutes of bonus content over on our Patreon at www.patreon.com/managingviolence. Almost screwed up the URL. Also, check out our website, www.violencepod.com, and also head over to our YouTube page. Getting more and more active on YouTube, doing some lives on YouTube as well. So if you're interested in interacting live time with me, picking my brain about the things I've learned over the past couple of years from talking to the world's leading experts in self-defense and violence, I'm over there regularly doing live Q&As and live thoughts on different episodes. So please join me. We're trying to do a lot more stuff on YouTube, so go give us a subscribe if you haven't already, and look forward to talking to you soon. Next week, I am joined by former Finnish National Police crisis negotiator, Totti Kapela. Totti is one of Europe's leading experts in threat assessment and conflict management, and we talk all about verbal de-escalation and conflict resolution strategies. So that is a really interesting conversation. Our first mainland Europe guest to spread the global footprint of the Managing Violence podcast. Thank you very much for your time. I look forward to talking to you next time.